Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is former Major League pitcher Paul Byrd, who spent 14 years in the big leagues from 1995 to 2009 with the Mets, Braves, Phillies, Royals, Angels, Indians, and Red Sox. And he's now a broadcaster covering the Atlanta Braves on Fox. Thanks a lot for coming on Inside China Basin to talk about the Giants-Braves series that's coming up. And, you know, really two teams right now, Paul, that are headed in different directions. The Giants have been a hot team, at least on their homestand. And the Braves, you know, they had a really tough start. Are they starting to break out of it, though, a little bit? I mean, they really couldn't get much going early in the season.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're, you know, you hate to use the term rebuilding because, you know, it alludes, you know, gives the fans the appearance of, hey, we got no shot. But really, we are rebuilding. You know, we have got a lot of young guys, a lot of huge trades. So the farm system went from 29 to 3 in the rankings. But, you know, this year we're taking a few hits and just haven't seemed to been able to click and get everything going. So, yeah, you're right. And, man, your Giants always seem to either win the World Series or come close or something. You got to give somebody else a chance, Joe. You know, you got to let somebody else, you know, have a dance at the party. So,
well, I'm sure during your 14-year career, there were teams that you were on where you're sitting there in the middle of the end of May and you're saying, you know what, we really don't have a chance to win the World Series. So how do you make the best of a season like that as a player?
Well, you love to play the game. That's what I would talk to young guys about, you know. Gosh, I mean, even in Kansas City, I would say, you know, we were struggling. It's like, man, let's not forget that we just love the game. You know, when you're a kid and you're 9 years old and you wake up and school's out and you run, go play wiffle ball, you're not worried about what happened yesterday or the day before, or, you know, you just enjoy the game. And so I think as a player, sometimes you forget that. I'm both a baseball player and a fan. And, you know, you forget that, hey, let's take it each day at a time, just enjoy the game, have a blast, hustle as hard as we can, do as well as we can, and, you know, try and get a win. And I think when you approach it like that, it doesn't have the heaviness. You're not carrying the heaviness of the last 3 months or 4 months that haven't gone your way, and you don't look at the record, you don't read the papers, you just really focus on that day. And I think that's the best approach when you're, you know, you're really struggling.
We'll have more with former Major League pitcher Paul Byrd in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free t-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free t-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. Now back to the conversation with former Major League pitcher and current Braves television analyst and sideline reporter, Paul Byrd. Well, you know, I go back to 2002. I was looking at your career, just realizing that you had a career-high 17 wins that year with the Kansas City Royals, and that was a team that lost 100 games. And your teammate on that team, Jeremy Affeldt, who was, of course, very successful with the Giants. Do you go back to that year? Is that an example of how, you know, you personally had a really good year? The team didn't, but I would imagine you learned a lot from that season.
Yeah, we did. I mean, that was a really fun year, not just because I had a good season, but we had good guys in the locker room. Affeldt was one of them. You mentioned him. You know, Mike Sweeney had some just tremendous people. Raul Ibanez, guys that I just really enjoyed. There's a camaraderie in getting out on the baseball field and fighting together and getting each other's backs. And, you know, so that's what I felt with the Royals. I was with some unselfish players, like I'd mentioned before, Mike Sweeney, Ibanez, Affeldt, one of them. And we just really enjoyed going out and competing and taking it one game at a time. So even though the loss column was higher than what I would have liked or what we all would have liked, we look back on that and say, man, that was a great year. It was a great locker room. We didn't win the World Series, but I wouldn't trade that year for anything. So
you guys had three managers that year. You started with Tony Muser. You had John Mizorak as an interim manager, and you finished with Tony Pena. So three managers. Now the Atlanta Braves are going through a second manager, and he's an interim manager, and Brian Snitker after Freddie Gonzalez was let go. So you know, how does that change things as a player when you've got different managers, different philosophies, I guess?
Well, and the guys were talking about that the other day. That is a phenomenal question. You have to learn their styles. You have to give the manager what he wants, and you're always going to play your game. You're always going to hustle and things like that, but you know, you really have to learn to speak the manager's language and get on the same page with what his communication style is. And some guys are players' managers, some guys are not. And you have to be able to handle, you know, if a guy gets on you the way he says it, and then another guy may not say much at all. One guy may have meetings every week. One guy may have one meeting a year. And, you know, Bobby Cox is like that. He hated having meetings. He wanted us to police ourselves. And so you have to learn those kind of things. And you went from Tony Muser, who military background and was strict. And I loved playing for Tony. And it was good. And then, you know, Mizorak came in, did a good job as the interim manager, and really didn't get a chance, you know, to know him that well. And when Tony Pena came in, he was very energetic, a little goofy. Had more meetings, this and that. And so each manager had a different feel. And I think the bottom line is you had to learn those managers quickly and be able to deal, you know, with people and get on board with what they were doing. So that was a very unusual year. And, yes, the Braves now learning Brian Snitker, new manager. And in case you guys don't know, out in San Fran, he started coaching in 1981.
That's a long time ago. Yeah, he's got a lot of experience. Yeah, what's his style? What's his style?
Everybody's so happy for him.
Yeah,
62 years old, finally gets his shot, and all the players are kind of rallying around that because he's coached some of the prospects in the minor leagues, and he's a player's guy, and everybody likes him. So, you know, that's a good story that I don't want you guys to miss when, you know. You take the field here at Turner.
Yeah. Well, how difficult of a situation was it for Freddie Gonzalez? Because, you know, you're in, like you said, the rebuilding mode, and nobody's really expecting you to win the World Series, but they're expecting better than the start that the Braves got off to. So, you know, tough for him and for the players sort of toward the end when you're just hearing all these stories about how he's going to be let go.
Yeah, that was a distraction, and you don't want it to be a distraction. It's not anybody's fault, but you know, whose fault it is probably us, you know, the media. When we say, hey, you know, is Freddie going to get fired, this and that. And then, you know, the players read that and they walk in the locker room and every day they're like, is this the day? Is he still going to be here? What's going on? I didn't think it was fair to Freddie. I don't think this game is fair. And I'm not trying to give a motivational speech, but it just isn't. Every day you find out why this game is not fair. And so they took a lot of players from Freddie, you know, and to Freddie's credit, he supported those trades because he's a team player. He said, you got to make this move in the Kimbrel trade. Got to make this move. It will make the Atlanta Braves better. Well, that hurts his record. But if you look at his record, he has a winning record with the Marlins and here with the Braves, even though a lot of his players were taken, you know, over the last 2 years. So you have to give him credit, but it started to become, I think, a distraction. And once they decided, you know, we're not going to have him back, once the brass decided that, that's when they made a decision to go ahead and say, okay, if he's not our guy, it's not fair for us to keep him here. And I think there was even some relief on Freddie because, you know, all that had been hanging over his head, and now he can move on and hopefully be in a different situation, and the Braves can, again, move on from Freddie and hopefully get going a little bit. Sometimes just a change of scenery as a player or a coach can help, even though it's not specifically anybody's fault.
Yeah, I hope so. I remember him being a good guy who also paid his dues. I remember him being a AAA manager when I was a AAA broadcaster. And, you know, I've always been a fan of Freddie. One thing that happened there at the end that I guess it was a clerical error, but still, you never want to lose your job and find out about it from somebody other than your boss. I mean, it's just kind of that,
right?
You know, it's just that classy way of finding, you know, as classy as it can be in that situation. But he finds out because his flight was booked and he got some notification, I guess maybe it was from Delta, before he even was able to talk, or they were able to talk to him about letting him go. That had to really be disturbing. You know, oh, what's this flight? I have to fly back to Atlanta. Am I losing my job? I guess yeah. I am.
That should have been handled differently. That was a mistake. I think the Braves would be the first to tell you, hey, we made a mistake there and didn't see that coming. Nobody's sure why that happened. And I'm not trying to stick up for the Braves, but we don't really have the 100% reason how that happened. They just simply made a mistake. To Freddie's credit, because I want to talk to you about, you know, you had mentioned how great he was, great with us,
uh-huh.
Great with the media, always took an interview, always was honest. Handled himself very professionally. He didn't throw players under the bus, but he got his point across if somebody wasn't doing the job. But he's very classy, so I really, really appreciated that. And true to form, when he found out and got that email, he grabbed a bottle of wine and went and knocked on the general manager's door and just, you know, said thank you and told some stories. And they just kind of, yeah, isn't that very classy? Because you know, he could have made a huge deal, a huge stink about it, and that's the kind of person Freddie Gonzalez is. That's the way he handled it. If I was a GM of a team and needed a manager, he'd be on the top of my list just simply because the players like playing for him, and he won. You know, he won with lesser talent at times, and so, you know, it wasn't working now, but over the course of his career, he's done that, and you know, things like the way he even handled that situation was very classy.
We'll have more with former Major League pitcher Paul Byrd, who is now an analyst on Fox, right after this.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-L-O-G-O.
How about what's in place? At the beginning of the year, there was a lot made out of how there were no home runs going over the wall, which has to really kind of be dispiriting for everybody in the lineup. But finally, I mean, Freddie Freeman's starting to hit some home runs. I think you expect more out of somebody like Nick Markakis. There are some veteran players on this team to help out the younger players. Do you see that over the course of the season being a benefit?
I do. It's very unusual right now, but I got to tell you, man, we needed Bumgarner. I mean, that's who we needed for some home runs. I think he was out homering us for a couple weeks this season, which was embarrassing, this guy. But, I know, isn't that crazy? But I got to tell you, man, we do have some guys you'd like to see the long ball more. And when you don't hit any home runs, you got to do everything right. You got to get guys over. You got to get the two-out hit. You got to get the runners in scoring position hit. You can fail at some of that. And then have a couple guys on. What I mean is leave guys on, not come through. And then get the big three-run homer, and it erases a lot of that. You know, it covers a lot of mistakes. And so when you don't get home runs, you don't get the long ball, you just can't mess up in any other area of the game. And so the Braves have experienced that. I think that's primarily the biggest reason for their win-loss column is they have to play errorless free, do everything right baseball because of their lack of power. So Freddie Freeman coming around, I was worried that you know, people were going to be pitching around him, but he's hit better as of late. He went 0 for 6 last night, but he has hit better as of late and pulled that average up, and I'm not really worried about him. But, yeah, some of the other guys, you start to wonder and say, okay, need to see a little more power. Is this just a phase, a 2-3 week phase, or do we expect this for the season? And so those are questions that I think everybody is anxious to see. So, you know, do I think the Braves are a, you know, 90-100 win team? No. Do I think they're better than what they're playing? Yes, absolutely. So, you know, maybe your Giants will give us a chance sometime. Throw a few four-seamers over the middle. And maybe let us hit a couple, you know?
Well, it looks like you're going to miss Madison Bumgarner in the rotation in this series. So that's a plus.
I hate to hear that.
But what about Julio Teheran? He's going to miss this series, too, because of the way the rotation pans out. But tell us about him. I mean, he's been a real leader on this staff. How important is it to get that kind of pitching? I mean, it looks like the pitching has not been as bad as maybe people would think with the record the Braves have.
Yeah, no, not at all. Especially the starting pitching, which is young and very good. They're trying to recreate what happened in the 90s, where they had, you know, the Smoltz, the Glavin, the Maddox, where, you know, people forget when Maddox and, I mean, even Maddox, yeah, when he came up, the ERA is 5.5 in Chicago, and you look at Glavin struggled first year in the fives. Smoltz had a good first year, but a poor second year. Well, they're trying to recreate that. They're trying to get guys that are going to be good for a long, long time. So guys to look for, you know, Julio Teheran, you'll miss him, but he is the competitor leader. He is the guy that overachieves. You know, he throws 90 in on your hands and it jams you. He's got incredible competitiveness. And then you look at guys like Matt Whistler, who, you know, we got from San Diego, who is a young man who is, gosh, he's going to be very good. He is now pitching really, really well, veteran, moves the ball in and out, really good slider. When his slider's on, he's really tough. And then an interesting pick is Foltynewicz. He is, you just can't pronounce that last name, Joe.
Foltynewicz, yeah.
Just say Foley.
Foley, okay, there you go, Foley.
He looks like he came in on a Harley. He's got, you know, shaved side head, the long hair up top, and different, you know, kind of beard every night. Really cool. Joe, I'm not kidding. Can throw the ball 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
Now, the problem is when he throws 100, he doesn't know where it's going. And he is just now committed and learning how to pitch. So he pitches, meaning doesn't step on the gas all the way, and throws 94, you know, 95, and hits his spot.
Okay.
Good breaking ball. He is the guy, he is the secret, in my opinion, one of the big keys, you know, to the Braves' success, not just this year, but years to come. Because if you got that million-dollar arm that decides to pitch at 94, 95, well, look out, man, that guy's going to be dangerous. So when you see guys like that, gives you hope, you know, for the future. And, you know, Perez as well. Perez is kind of like a Paul Bird, man. And, you know, I'm not promoting myself because I wasn't very good. He's a much better version than me. But he reminds our styles are similar in that, you know, he's like facing your uncle in a backyard wiffle ball game. He can throw like 6 pitches anytime. You know, you're not sure what he's going to throw in any situation. And he works that to his advantage. He isn't going to probably strike you out. He isn't going to walk you. And there's going to be ground balls and fly balls. And I just enjoy that, watching him pitch, that style. And he's somebody that nobody really talks about. But he's, you know, he's got a chance. So, you know, a lot of guys in that rotation are fun to watch. That's probably the brightest aspect of our game right now. And it's be interesting to see how that plays out in the future, because if the Braves grab a few free agent hitters, then, you know, they'll be off to the races.
Well, I beg to differ, by the way. You won over 100 games. You were stuck around for 14 years, and you didn't walk anybody, so you were a really good pitcher.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you. You know, I tell people, you know, Terry Francona described me best at the end of his career. He kept me for a playoff roster when I came out of retirement and all this, and the reporter's like, why'd you put Bird on the roster? He goes, well, he goes, he's going to go out there and throw 86, 87. He's not going to walk anybody. He's not going to strike anybody out. And most of the time, it's going to work. But if it doesn't, it's going to get real ugly. And that's kind of the way, you know, it goes. So anyway, thank you for saying that, though. I certainly enjoyed the game. I had a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm so thankful for baseball.
I got to ask you, this has been on my mind ever since Madison Bumgarner had a little shouting match with Will Myers of the Padres, and the benches cleared. They didn't hit each other, but, you know, we've had a little bit of animosity going on in baseball. You had the Bautista-Odor situation. When you look at your career, were there times where, you know, a hitter agitated you, or you had to do something, you know, as a teammate, you know, you got to throw at a hitter? Now that you're retired, can you admit that you had to do something like that, and how difficult is that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my biggest thing was, I mean, it was time in Kansas City. We talked about earlier where they Mike Sweeney was hit on purpose and more than once. And so we had to stick up for him and hit Robert Fick. And, you know, I remember hitting him, and I didn't want to hurt him. Like, I didn't want to throw at his head or do something.
Right.
You know, I wanted to respectfully say, you can't hit my guy over and over and think that I'm not going to hit one of yours. And unfortunately, there's, you know, sometimes there's no other way to work that out on the field. And you're on the sixth grade playground again, and you got to stick up for your buddy. And so things like that can bring a team together. I'm not advocating hurting anybody, because I got to be real careful. So, you know, if you're a young kid out there listening, I'm not saying, hey, go throw at people. But in the major leagues, there is times where you do have to stick up for your teammates. And that's just part of the game. And it's kind of not talked about a whole lot. But, yeah, you do need to do that. And you know, in a really I played with Robert Fick the next year.
Oh, okay.
And Mike Sweeney was on first base. And I told Mike Sweeney, when he got to first base, to tell Robert Fick, you know, I hit him because I thought you were the best player on the team. And, you know, please take that as an honor, because I thought Sweeney got hit, you know, for us. So, and he was our best player. So when Fick got to first and Sweeney told him that, I mean, it meant a lot to Robert Fick.
Good.
Strangely as that sounds, I mean, he understood it, because the thing is, like, wait, why me? You know, but that was my reasoning, and that was what I felt I needed to do. And then I paid the fine, and we moved on. And sometimes that's just, you know, that's just baseball.
Well, it's a good thing you did that, because if he's going to be your teammate the next year,
yes,
you got to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, his wife was mad at me way more than he was. So, but, you know, I mean, but let's say, you know, I would have handled it differently and thrown in his head, you know, I mean, this is just, there's just ways to do it. And a lot of times you don't really have to hit somebody, you know, you can just throw a pitch where they have to move. I remember Clemens said, it's my job to throw inside and it's their job to get out of the way. And sometimes you can make your point by just brushing somebody back. And then, you know, so yeah. But you know what, Joe? I never slid into second and tried to take out somebody's knee and got up and got punched, or, you know, or punched anybody in the head. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's good.
I wasn't on first very much, so I never had that opportunity.
That's right. Before I let you go, since you mentioned Jeremy Affeldt, and he was a regular guest here on this podcast for years, we loved him, and there was always great stories about him. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of them had to do with fluky injuries that he had, you know, cutting his finger while slicing some frozen hamburger meet, and also just, you know, catching his kids and messing up his knee. There was always something with Jeremy. Were there any funny stories when you played with him?
Well, he was a mess, and I mean that in a great way, just a beautiful mess. I mean, he was your left-handed baseball player that was all personality and great in the locker room. But when he was with Kansas City, I remember his fingernail. He could not. And so he was going and getting, he's going to nail salons and he's getting Lee press on nails. And so we're just harassing him and all this and pickle juice. And he cannot get, this ingrown nail. And so it's really affecting him. And it was ugly. And so we all just harassed him over that. And I remember one time telling him to just cut it off, be like three finger brown. Just, get it over with and you'll have a new pitch because of it and all that. But, man, really, he's one of those guys you pull for, so I'm glad to see him turn it around.
Yeah, well, now he's in the broadcasting business, just like you.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Paul, hey, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the Braves-Giants series, and look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
You got it, Joe. Take it easy on us, okay?
Okay. That's Braves sideline reporter and analyst and former Major League pitcher Paul Byrd. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll hear from Giants outfielder Angel Pagan. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.